Welcome to the Week in IndyCar News. We've got Robin Miller here. It was a pretty stellar weekend in Wisconsin, wouldn't you say, my man? Any trip to Road America tends to be pretty awesome, but you have good weather, good fan turnout, not amazing fan turnout, and we'll touch on that in a little bit, but I don't know, brother. It's kind of hard to get grumpy about spending a weekend in the Kettle Moraine Valley.
Well, when you got a road race over a four-mile track that comes down to 0.5 seconds between two of the best guys in the series, and some pretty damn good racing all the way through the pack all day, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what else you can say. That's road racing. That's as good as it gets, and that's all you can hope for. You want a close finish, and you know, Newgarden stalked Dixon for the last 10, 12, 14 laps, whatever it was, and just like he said afterwards, he goes, "I was fast, I just wasn't fast enough." He said, "I might have even been a little faster, but I couldn't, you know, it didn't matter because I wasn't going to get by him because he never makes a mistake." And I think, you know, that track seems to bring out the best in guys that are good racers. I mean, that is the quintessential road course. It's got every kind of corner, and it's fast, and it's challenging, and that's why everybody looks forward to it, just like the Glen.
So after the race, you and I were trying to figure out how the hell Dixon won that race because, well, granted, you, of course, predicted it, which we already covered in our video,
and
I continue to hate you.
What a fabulous record I have.
Yeah, but we were searching for some clues. I mean, we saw what he did. I mean, the guy, I've said this for years, and I'll keep saying it, Dixon is the best of his generation. So it's not as if this was some fluke, how did Dixon win the race? He's the best there is in this generation and went out and proved it yet again. He has more championships than any active driver, is just, you know, a nightmare to deal with. And given a big challenge, he's the one guy who continually rises to meet that challenge. And again, at the time, you and I were both scratching our head a little bit about how the hell did he actually do that? And in, the days that have followed, we pieced a little bit of it together. Obviously, part of it was their aero choice. They didn't go for crazy low downforce and drag. Did actually add a little bit more downforce to the car, which helped him rocket off of the corners. Helped under braking. Then also, we know the Hondas are pretty strong on the straightaway. So that definitely played a role. He, to live with that slightly higher level of downforce. Obviously, if you're having to pull more downforce through the air, that engine's working harder, burning more fuel. Well, who's the best in the field at saving fuel? Scott Dixon. So again, another perfect person for the challenge. And if you keep in mind that he was able to do that fuel saving, well, in theory, during those pit stops where the Chip Ganassi team, the number 9 team, were amazing every time he came onto pit lane, with a little bit less fuel to have to put in the tank, those stops were pretty darn quick. I know I saw one that was a little bit more than a half second faster than, I forget whether it was Elio or Newgarden coming out, but you look at all these little things that he did, chipping away at this big Penske Chevy Armada. Just pretty amazing work by him, the team, engineer Chris Simmons, Mike Hull, strategist, 25th anniversary. This wasn't just a fluke. This wasn't just a crazy result. This was a lot of things going right and the perfect driver being asked to pull all these things off, yeah?
Absolutely. But for the first time all year, he got a good break, and that was that yellow. Because if you think about it, he jumped from fifth to second because he stayed out a lap longer. So he passed Elio, and I think he passed Pagenaud on the track. He passed Elio and Power in the pits, so he gets to second. Now, Joseph also went a lap further than everybody else. So those two, I mean, Joseph, that's why I think he was so distraught after the race. I mean, he drove a perfect race, and he was probably the fastest car on the track. And he said, you know, I take no solace in finishing second when I had the car to beat. And it's pretty frustrating. But he did exactly, and, you know, a lot of people said, well, yeah, you know, Cindric and the Penske, they stepped on it when they put on black tires. Look, when he put on black tires, he had a nice, healthy lead and a race that didn't look like they had any, you know, there wasn't any real signs it was going to go yellow at any time soon. And he did, that's exactly the strategy to have because he was comfortably ahead when the yellow came out. And then with Dixon having red tires, he got ate up. And after he got ate up, it was close, but no banana. I mean, he ran as hard. He ran Dixon down. I think he was three and a half seconds behind there with 12 laps to go and cut it all the way to being right underneath his wing, but that's all he could do with him. So when you think about Dixon should have won St. Pete, got a bad yellow. He had a chance to win Indy, got a bad break, a chance to win Texas, got crashed. Barbary finished second to Joseph. I mean, it's about time the guy got a break, and he even said that afterwards. So it was a lot of things. It was a lot of good things that happened to him, and he created most of them.
It was also pretty impressive to see that the Ganassi team as a whole, I guess probably barring TK, I mean, Tony didn't have a standout weekend, but three of the four Ganassi cars were really strong in the race. You had Charlie Kimball, who, granted, he didn't really jump out as a super big name the entire time, but Chuck had a good race, drove really hard. Max Chilton did the same thing as well. Spencer Pigot spoke with him and was trying to piece together why he charged from 14th to 7th, I think it was, then fell back, then had to charge forward to 12th. Said the right front camber shims came loose, so he had to pit. That took quite some time to tighten those up. Went back out. The left front camber shims loosened up and had to pit again and have those tightened. And, I mean, that is the suspension equivalent of having a wobbly wheels, of not having the lug nuts tight. Pretty scary stuff to have that happen once, much less twice. But amid all of that, the kid goes out and, 12th place. No one would look at that result and go, boy, what an amazing drive. In reality, it was amazing. And last year, funnily enough, Road America in 2016 was a race where, for me, that was the first time he really showed that, all right, this kid's special. We know he's the reigning Indy Lights champ, but this time he really told folks, all right, there's something here to follow. Granted, again, 12th, nothing special, but knowing what he did to get back to 12th, that kid really impressed me. Who else stood out to you, Robin?
Chilton's been driving really well for over a month now. And the thing with Spencer is he can't get a break either. I mean, think about two unscheduled pit stops on a 4-mile racetrack. Think what kind of time that cost you. Think how far behind that put you. So, I don't know. I think he's really showed Ed Carpenter that, I'm worthy of having a drive here for quite a while. Because, he just needs to get some oval track experience next. He just needs to have that ride be full time. And I think he'll be set for a nice career. But other than that, I think, I'm just trying to kind of draw a blank. I don't think anybody jumps out that they, Pagenaud had a nice car and a nice race, but didn't do anything special. Will probably was kicking his, Ed Jones, we got to think about Ed Jones. He started 11th, finished 7th, another good result for him. And the move of the race was probably Graham Rahal at the start when he passed Pagenaud on the outside with a skirting the left side tires on the grass, and then he got up to, I think, 5th or 4th, and then I don't know what he just, that thing was looked pretty loose all day, so he was out throwing around. I suppose Carlos Munoz, and that was his very first, he was racy because he got to run the whole race, and Foyt's team struggled. I feel bad for Connor Daly. People say, what's wrong with Connor Daly? Well, when you're 2 miles an hour slower down the straightaway than your teammate on a place like Road America, that's what's wrong with you.
You had a story that I know a lot of folks were happy to read in the Midwest, and that was after a amazing turnout last year for IndyCar's return to Road America, the board there, the track's governing board, decided, hey, look at that. This was huge. We should charge a lot more and capitalize on it. And then you and I came back this year, and we're expecting, hoping to see the same kind of turnout. I mean, Friday last year at IndyCar at Elkhart, you couldn't walk. I mean, you just couldn't move. The place was so packed with people. This Friday, it was definitely a lot easier to walk around. Certainly weren't as many people, weren't as many motorhomes. And as you started to dig into things and, got a better detail on what was going on, come to find out that they were asking, they got greedy, I guess is the easiest way to put it. Yet, after seeing the downturn in attendance Friday and Saturday, it was a good walk-up crowd on Sunday, but seeing the downturn, you found out after the race that they realized, oops, all right, we're going back to what really works, and we're going to make things a lot more affordable.
Well, here's the thing. You have a $100 ticket for 4 days last year, and you had 50,000 people on race day alone. You had 100,000 people for 3 days. And I guarantee you, those figures might, I almost thought those were low. And, you know, promoters are notorious. But I like George. George Brugenthes. And I just don't – I think he even said, you know, when I called him on Monday, he said, yeah, the crowd was a little down. But when you think about it and you go from 50 to basically 35,000 people in 1 year and you think about all the people that didn't go and then they had a – they tacked on – I think it's $60 or $70 for an armband if you had a camper or whatever, and that rubbed people the wrong way. You can go anywhere you want in the paddock, and that was great. It was great about the $100 ticket because you had 4 days, and it got you in every day, and it got you in the paddock every day, and you didn't have to pay to park. And it was just that's why they're going to bring it back until September 1st, and I think it started again today. I think today it's on the website, but when you think about it's like I wrote, when you're disappointed there was only 35,000 people because you were so happy and so proud of what they were able to accomplish a year ago, it goes to show you it's still one of the two or three best attendances all year. I mean, with Long Beach, I'm not sure anybody's going to top what Elkhart Lake had last Sunday afternoon. So, you know, people don't get greedy. And it's a great facility, and George has spent a lot of money upgrading it, and I think he's probably convinced his board of directors, look, let's go back to what we were working on. Oh, I know what I was going to say. Because this year, they didn't have a $100 ticket. So if you could only come on Saturday or Sunday, I think Saturday was 70 and Sunday was 80 or something like that, well, that's a pretty sizable chunk of change. Just think about that. If you came Saturday and Sunday, you'd probably spend $150, whereas you could have spent $100 and be all there all 4 days last year. So I think it's probably the best bargain, like George said, in racing. $100 for 4 days at Elkhart Lake to see all the doubleheaders with the Mazda laddered Indy system and the Pirelli World Challenge. I mean, you got plenty of racing for your money, and I think they learned a pretty valuable lesson, and it'll probably be huge again next year.
So we had a test this week at Iowa, directly following Road America, where a little roughly half the field showed up. Penske wasn't there. Foyt wasn't there. Ganassi wasn't there, but we had the Andretti cars. Schmidt was there. Ray Hall, both Ed Carpenter Racing cars, and I'm probably forgetting one other. But the Andrettis were the fastest among the Hondas. Ed Carpenter and Jerry Hildebrand were fastest overall in their Chevys. And one of the Honda drivers told me it was like taking candy from a baby with how clear the Chevy advantage was, which, you know, if we look back at Phoenix, another short oval, not a complete surprise. So knowing that we had a bit of a Honda shocker at Road America, we're never going to count out Scott Dixon. I'm never going to make that mistake again. But it definitely looks like heading into Iowa, we wouldn't be foolish to once again predict a strong weekend for the bow tie. And we also had Esteban Gutierrez go through his first ever oval experience. So cool for him to get past that hurdle learning-wise so he can come back and race. So a little bit of in-between stuff with this test before IndyCar has a little bit of time off ahead of the July 8-9 race in lovely Iowa.
Which needs to be back on Saturday night, by the way, in case they happen to take notes. Sunday night's the worst night you could ever have a race. But that's just my opinion. And back to Ed Carpenter's team. If they bolt on the setup that Newgarden had last year, I mean, that was one of the most dominant performances in recent memory. They will both be tough to beat.
So let's close on something that a listener asked us to discuss. And Pippa Mann actually forwarded this little document to me a week or two ago. I think I was right in the middle of Le Mans stuff, so I wasn't able to get to it. This was the SHE, S-H-E, Female Open Wheel Racing Series that someone is wanting to start next year. What is the SHE Championship? They ask in their one-pager. SHE Championship Limited is the first ever female single-seater motor racing series. People from the motor racing industry and professionals in sport have come together to form a management team. It is intended that in 3 years, this will be the highest profile international racing championship, second only to Formula One. The women who will drive will be the best female motor racing drivers in the world. A little bit of a redundancy there. Prize money in an F1 test will reward the winners. Interesting one. And I also love the fact that someone asked, two white males over the age of 40 to discuss women's racing series. It's kind of like the government deciding women's health issues when it's, you know, 99% white men. I know you're going to have an opinion too, but how's this? Pippa's problem with this, and I can't disagree with her on the surface, is what an outmoded idea. In 2017, the idea of creating a spectacle for women only in an open wheel series, it seems like a very old-fashioned thing. And I can't disagree with that. The, you know, if you start doing this, would you have a series for all black drivers? If you just start limiting things, and I'm not talking about a racing series in Mexico for Mexican women to further Mexican women as race car drivers in their home country. I'm talking about a, call it a universal international championship that's meant to draw women from wherever throughout the world to just be a spectacle as an all-female series. I'll admit, it sounds a little weird and a little strange. And I don't think on the surface it does anything overly positive. But, there's always a but, then I look at the Verizon IndyCar series and realize that we have how many full-time female drivers? Zero. I look at the Mazda Road to Indy. That's three tiers. The beginning, it's USF 2000. The middle, it's Pro Mazda. The top, it's Indy Lights. We have two young women racing at the very first step, USF 2000. Nothing in Pro Mazda, nothing in Lights. If you look in IMSA, actually IMSA is really one of the very few places where we can talk about road racing in that world where women have a noticeable presence and there are some kick-ass women doing it. So not just there by numbers, but actually doing well. Catherine Legg, who won the most recent GT Daytona class event in Detroit with Acura. Christina Nielsen, the reigning champion in GT Daytona. Another badass. You look in the Continental Tire Series. Women have raced in that and successfully for a while. The Lamborghini Super Trofeo Cup that IMSA runs. There's a number of good women in there. Ashley Freiberg's a name that a lot will recognize from her success. You look at Pirelli World Challenge, which is more of a pro-am series. I mean, let's be honest, this isn't, you know, women being paid a lot of money to drive race cars, but there's a good three or four. Shea Holbrook stands out as one. Sarah Montgomery's another. Trans Am, Amy Ruman, champion, awesome. But you get outside of our world, Robin, of road racing and ovals. Obviously, you can look at Danica Patrick and NASCAR. There's been, you know, some presence there, but for the most part, there aren't a lot of women making money, being paid to be professional race car drivers. So there's a part of me that says, while the concept of a she racing championship sounds like a gimmick that is not exactly going to enhance or move the needle in a positive direction for female professional race car drivers and motor racing, the other side of me says, if this is the thing that helps a team or someone to see talented women racing and to consider them for the first time, maybe it's not such a bad thing after all, knowing that the sheer numbers right now in so many championships range from zero to almost zero.
Well, there's too many series in the world already. We don't need another series. But I'd love to see Simona Di Silvestro and Catherine Legg an open wheel car. Simona showed us that she could road race with men like no one else ever has. And IndyCar didn't think it was important enough to keep Danica, so they really didn't try. Nobody really reached out to keep Simona. And I think Catherine she got thrown into Champ Car before she was ready, but what else is she going to do? She got the opportunity. But, you know, she got better and better and better. And, you know, so what are your choices? Simona's making a living driving is it V8 Super Cup cars this year, Marshall?
Yeah, supercars. She's in Australia.
She's in Australia. So she's making a living, and her team evidently isn't very good, and it's not much fun, but she's doing it as a professional race driver. So if you don't have money, nobody obviously, whatever people thought of Danica Patrick, she was really good at Indy, and she was pretty damn good at Texas and pretty damn good at Homestead. And she had people talking about IndyCar. She was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. And when the series that she's in doesn't think it's a big enough deal to keep her in a car, if she'd have gone to NASCAR first, can you imagine them letting her come to IndyCar? No, it would never happen. They'd have made sure she had a ride. Well, IndyCar didn't think like that. And Simona, because she's, I don't know, she was becoming a very popular driver, I thought, and for her gutsy performance when she was, you know, got burned and came back real quick in Indy, and just her whole overall demeanor, Catherine the same way. So if this was a chance to get them back in open wheel racing, hell yes. But I don't know that it is. I just don't know. I don't know enough about it. And it's you got to have something to get people interested anymore. So would an all-female series get people to watch? I don't know. I just don't know. I don't know anymore. They, you know, they watched. We finally got a few people to watch Texas, and the Elkhart Lake race rating wasn't very good, and that was a hell of a road race. So I mean, I have no idea. I just think that there is a place for Simona DiSilvestro in IndyCar, and unfortunately, that and nobody seems to agree.
I mean, another little bit of historical context, and it's not super old, but Dr. Don Panos, when he came in and bought or created what we now, or what we knew as the American Le Mans series, in and around that same time, he created an all-women series, the Women's Global GT Championship. A number of the women who competed in it had been around for a while, had had careers, and were at the tail end of their careers. But there are also some women. You know, Cindy Lux was a champion in the first year of it. Cindy Lux is just a badass. And this series, to me, helped confirm the fact that she was, opened the door. It advanced her capabilities to move forward in the sport. And there are a few other women, too, who, through this championship, all female, were able to at least gain some recognition, gain some sponsorship, and have a career for, you know, however many years. I can't say for each of them, but some were able to have something happen. And that is the, I guess you could say, I don't know if it's the dark side of something like this that is very, you know, either race or gender specific and feels weird in 2017. But if someone is going to see you and want to sponsor you or offer you a ride or do something, I just try and work the problem backwards. What's the issue? Why aren't there more women in motor racing? Is it because they lack talent? Hell no. Of course not. Is it money? Yeah. Is it opportunity? Yeah. Well, could a series like this help in some capacity? You'd have to believe it would. If it doesn't, then I would say absolutely kill the thing immediately. Two other quick points. One item that Pippa raised, and I really like this, and if anything, I think this is the mindset I wish more people would have. So we've seen in the Mazda Road to Indy, and even IndyCar a little bit, something called Rising Star Racing. And it's some it's folks with some money who've decided to get behind some young American talent. Granted, at least so far, all I've seen is young American men. But we've seen that there's been some sponsorship, been some promotion put behind young drivers to help them move up the ladder and try and get to the top. Well, as Pippa pointed out, and I agree wholeheartedly, would I rather see these she championship people consider that? Hey, if we've put some money together and we have investors that are interested in this, maybe we should try and spread the wealth a little bit and have that kind of advancement thing instead of this series, which I can guarantee you it's probably never going to happen. And if it does, it's going to die within 2 or 3 years because ideas like this always come and go quickly. But I think something like that would probably be a much bigger help. The other thing, too, which I think is interesting, you've probably seen this week, the back and forth between John McEnroe and Serena Williams. You have this belief that in most sports, women cannot compete with men. Motor racing is one pretty awesome antidote to that. As many female drivers have said, the car doesn't know what gender I am, doesn't know the gender of its driver. The driver with the most talent is probably going to shine. I don't care who you are, where you came from, how you were born, how you ended up. If you have skill and you have a car that's capable of demonstrating it, you're going to stand out. it's sad, a bit of an old thing where, to your point, IndyCar effectively didn't do more to keep its biggest star in Danica Patrick, and now there's been a complete void since then. I realize that we have Pippa on occasion. I realize that we had Simona for a little bit, but IndyCar doesn't have anything in terms of genuine female talent that's ready to climb into a car before the end of the decade that I know of. IMSA does have some stars, but they are buried in its lowest class. You do not have a Christina Nielsen or a Catherine Legg in a top prototype capable of winning and kicking ass. World Challenge, same thing. You don't have any women in the top. Trans Am, again, we love it, but it's no longer a household thing, but there is a woman there kicking ass. NHRA is really the one place where we see women, you know, in every step, in every category, doing some pretty amazing things. Doesn't surprise me that that tradition has continued. You see something, you realize it can be done, and you try to attempt that and hopefully become part of that.
Simona's the only female that's ever been able to go after. I mean, she's done things in a champ in an Indy car that nobody else has on road courses and street courses. And Danica was pretty damn good on ovals. And those two are head and shoulders above anybody that's ever driven one. And they couldn't keep a ride. And, you know, Maddie Brabham can't get a ride. And Sage Karam can't get a ride. I mean, you know, it's money. It's not necessarily, I mean, I don't know. It's just, there's a lot of people that got a sob story, and there's a lot of people that are more talented than some of them that are bitching the loudest. So my feeling is if there's no place for Simona over here to drive an open wheel car in the IndyCar series, I don't think any other series is going to help her probably realize that goal unless somebody puts a lot of money behind her.
Well, we should actually close on the one thing which stood out to you and I all last weekend. And that was, good Lord, brother. You and I could not walk 10 feet without people saying something really nice, cool, supportive, whether it's about the videos, podcasts, racer.com in general, about IndyCar coverage. You and I are usually having to duck the rocks and other things that are being thrown at us. So pretty cool. What did you think about just the general love from a passionate crowd at Road America?
Well, I spent about $400 in $10 bills getting them to come by and say those things. So it was expensive, but I'm not too proud to beg or give money. It just shows you that people, the Elkhart Lake, the Road America crowd is a perfect cross-section of IndyCar fans. They wear the shirts. They know what's going on. They care. They listen to our podcast. They read racer.com. And it reminds me of the crowd at Long Beach. It reminds me of the crowd at Indy. Iowa's another one. And, you know, even Barber in Birmingham, Alabama has a lot of people like that. So there are IndyCar fans out there in hardcore, and you know, you appreciate it. It makes you feel, okay, we're not wasting our time here. We're doing something that people enjoy, and that, you know, if we can tell them something that maybe we don't write about it, then, and, you know, give them a little something that maybe is extra, great. That's hopefully why we're being hired, I think. It could be our looks, but it's probably why we're being hired.
I think so, and I didn't have any death threats, death wishes, or folks wishing gay death on me. So it's a pretty big turnaround week to week. Lots from that to lots of love. So I'm in a thorough state of confusion, but I'm going to write it out and love it.
Yeah, just remember this. I can't believe how many people write letters to the mailbag 52 weeks. I mean, really big time. It takes 2 days during the season because that's when everybody writes. But, you know, getting letters 52 weeks a year tells me there's a lot of passionate people still out there. And now that they've jumped on the Pruitt podcast, that works too. And it's just, you know, that's the one thing about Racer. I mean, we've got, you know, we can write about it or we can talk about it or do a video. And it's the world's greatest job. We both know that.
Amen to that, brother. All right. Well, that is the end of the week in IndyCar news. Now, should I have been recording?
Oh, that little red light wasn't on, was it?
All right, Miller. Well, enjoy your weekend. Don't get arrested.
Have a good 4th of July. Talk to you soon.
All right, brother.